This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
I think it's, okay, a little mic is on. Well, I know many of you, but for those of you whom I don't yet know, my name is Eduardo Cadava, and on behalf of Slot, I'd like to thank you for being here. I mean, it's nice that you showed up, given the aftermath of the storm. I'd like to thank Aaron and Jean-Michel for all of their kindness and support in making this event possible. And I'd like to thank Elizabeth for the work that made this occasion possible as well. So A Certain Slant of Light is the first of a series of small slot-sponsored exhibitions of work by young artists, and in this instance, the San Francisco-based photographer Elizabeth Perinotti. I first met Elizabeth during the summer of 2008 when I was invited by Oakley and Weser to teach a graduate course at the San Francisco Art Institute. And in a group of artists, video makers, photographers, and theorists that I met during the visit, Elizabeth was for me the most thoughtful and attentive of them, and especially in her capacity to relate the materials we were reading to her photographic work. When I first encountered her work, though, I was very moved by its attention to the themes that matter most to me, memory, loss, mourning, death, time, and survival. And I've come to cherish the opportunity to come to know her and her work, and I'm very pleased to be able to introduce it to you here. As you noticed when you walked into the Slot Gallery, the little exhibition, which is in these two vaults, is installed in the margins of Slot's current exhibition, Strictly Death. Elizabeth's photographs stage, for me, the experience of loss, death, and mourning that are photography's signature, at the same time that they initiate a play of light and shadows, traces and time, perspectives and slanted views that invite us to reflect not simply on the limits, but also the possibilities of the very medium itself. Elizabeth's accompanying video, Plates, which is in this room, offers an allegorical counterpoint to what Walter Benjamin called the photographic plates of remembrance, and does so in order to suggest the interruptions, breaks, and destruction that arrive with the photographic arrest. If every photograph works to preserve or fix a memory, it also threatens to put it under erasure. Together, these works suggest that the kind of looking, recording, and witnessing that a single photograph occasions always also bears witness for photography in general. For all its singularity, a photograph cannot but evoke, in more or less subterranean ways, its relation to photography as such. According to Elizabeth, the photographic image cannot be thought in isolation from the concept of the trace and from the ways in which it allegorizes a subject's dispersal, even when photography works to capture a subject by interrupting and arresting time in the moment of a shutter's release. This can be seen in all of the photographs in this exhibition, but perhaps particularly in the imprints made on the surface of flour in the sixth of the series. Taking its title from Emily Dickinson's remarkably photographic poem, There's a Certain Slant of Light, the exhibition, like the poem, encourages its viewer to look at a death that he or she cannot see past. If the poem understands loss as natural, as a mere conversion, say of day into night, of light into shadows and darkness, Elizabeth's photographs tell us that there is nothing but loss, death, and transformation. Nothing else is more natural, even as they seek to mark the survival that is necessary to bear witness to this death and change. Whether signaling the indirectness or slant of light, the imprint or thread of this or that particular moment, the extremities of the body, feet, hands, or hair, or the tenuous line between the human and non-human, these photographs are traversed by finitude. This is why the slant of light, which in Dickinson appears as a kind of imperial affliction, is not simply a premonition of death, of the death that comes with every photograph, but a kind or type of death. In these photographs, light is itself a kind of death, even as death is perhaps what makes light possible. Everything that follows from this indicates that the experience of loss, the anticipation of death, enables each photograph, what Dickinson calls a seal, a certain slant of light, to probe the conditions and consequences of perception. The signature of this loss will be marked in what keeps and does not lose, what keeps, preserves, and seals loss. As Derrida has remarked, it is necessary to keep loss as loss. This is perhaps the photographic emotion, the poignancy of which Barthes speaks. One keeps the archive of something, of someone as something, which took place once and is lost, that one keeps as such, as the unkept, in short, a sort of cenotaph, an empty tomb, end quote. But what exactly are loss and death? This is the question that all photographs ask us to engage, and it can be posed at each step of Elizabeth's photographic trajectory. The world she photographs no longer exists, and already, even as she was photographing it, it was in the process of altering and disappearing. This is why these photographs recall the traces and specificity of a particular moment, even as they inevitably mark the disappearance, loss, and ruin of this same moment. Indeed, the strength of these images lies in their insistence that things pass, that they change and alter. The very law that motivates and marks her photographs is this law of change and transformation. Elizabeth knows that everything will pass, and this is why her photographs involve as much the production as the recording of images, as much an act as a gaze, as much a performative event as a passive archivization. This is also why everything in her photographs is not only destined to death, to what we elsewhere have called strictly death, but also to the survival and preservation of what is always about to vanish. Before inviting you all to see the exhibition or to view it again, I just want to mention that the vault in which the photographs are installed has John Cage's desk in it. This is a recent acquisition of Slott, and when the exhibition was being installed, we wondered if we would leave the desk in the vault or remove it for the duration of the exhibition. We decided to leave it, partly because of the aura it lends to the room and to the experience of viewing the photographs, but also because its presence evokes the resonance that exists between Elizabeth's photographic project and his musical one. Beyond the fact that the modernist house that Cage lived in with the architect Paul Williams and his family had walls of windows that would have permitted him to view from his desk a sylvan environment that resembles the wooded scenes in three of Elizabeth's photographs, the reflections of which Cage so often spoke and which he saw in the glass windows of the house also are mimed in the reflections that can be viewed in the plexiglass that covers the photographs. This interplay of multiple reflections across space and time, this link between sight and architecture, is evoked in a lecture that Cage delivered in Chicago in 1957 entitled Experimental Music, in which he stated, "For in this new music, nothing takes place but sounds, those that are notated and those that are not. Those that are not notated appear in the written music as silences, opening the doors of the music to the sounds that happen to be in the environment. This openness exists in the fields of modern sculpture and architecture. The glass houses of Ms. van der Rohe reflect their environment, presenting to the eye images of clouds, trees, or grass, according to the situation. And while looking at the constructions and wire of the sculptor Richard Lippold, it is inevitable that one will see other things, and people too, if they happen to be there at the same time, through the network of wires. There is no such thing as an empty space or an empty time. There is always something to see, something to hear. In fact, try as we may to make silence, we cannot," end quote. Drawing a relation between seeing and hearing, Cage describes a scene he might have seen in his house, and perhaps from his desk. A scene in which, because of the sun's light, walls would act as projection screens on which shadows could multiply the clouds, trees, and grass, and the glass windows could become mirrors in which these images are repeated. In the same way that it is no longer possible for Cage to keep apart the outside world from the inside of his house, to make a silence that wouldn't be interrupted, the photographs in Elizabeth's series not only reflect each other, but also incorporate the spaces, views, and objects outside of them onto their surfaces, including Cage's desk, and thereby open the photographs further to the seriality and context of which they are a part. These are photographs that, in their muteness, in their silence, nevertheless speak of the moment in which they were taken, as well as of the moments they absorb and seal within them, even if only for a fleeting moment, as we walk amidst them, as we view them. These are images that, even as they were being installed, already included this desk along their surface. The staging of this exhibition, therefore, is meant to enact what Cage meant by an experimental action, in which we can, in his words, see things directly as they are, impermanently involved in an infinite play of interpenetrations, end quote. Since, as I've mentioned, Elizabeth's exhibition is installed in the margins of Slott's current exhibition, Strictly Death, I would like to close my remarks with a few words from a piece that Cage was writing just before his death in 1992. The piece is called Overpopulation and Art, and in it, Cage could still suggest, anticipating the lesson of Elizabeth's photographs, "We live in glass houses, our vitric surroundings transparent, reflective, putting images outside in space of what's inside, our homes, everything as multiplied as we are." Thank you very much. I invite you to talk to Elizabeth, who's hiding in the back, and to see the two exhibitions. Thank you very much for coming. Thank you.